the Kill Radio Weekly News and Review. I'm your announcer, DJ Shy John. This was recorded on Tuesday, September the 3rd, 2013. In the top of the news today, I have an article from naturalnews.com. Cops nationwide stealing cash, jewelry, valuables from innocent citizens under civil forfeiture laws. This is dated Thursday, August 29th, 2013, by J.D. Hayes, H-E-Y-E-S. Natural News. If you've never heard of civil forfeiture laws, you're about to get an eye-opening education. What's more, you're going to be disappointed that far too many local police departments, maybe even your own, are using these laws to rip off innocent citizens and help fund their own operations. In a recent lengthy piece for The New Yorker magazine, Sarah Stillman described in detail how these laws have been abused by police agencies all over the country to extort money and valuables from people whose only crime was traveling through their jurisdictions. The basic principle behind asset forfeiture is appealing. It enables authorities to confiscate cash or property obtained through illicit means and, in many states, funnel the proceeds directly into the fight against crime. In Tulsa, Oklahoma, cops drive a Cadillac Escalade stenciled with the words, "This used to be a drug dealer's car, now it's ours." In Monroe, North Carolina, police recently proposed using $44,000 in confiscated drug money to buy a surveillance drone, which might be deployed to catch fleeing suspects, conduct rescue missions, and perhaps seize more drug money. Hundreds of state and federal laws authorize forfeiture for cockfighting, drag racing, basement gambling, endangered fish poaching, securities fraud, and countless other misdeeds. In general, you needn't be found guilty to have your assets claimed by law enforcement. In some states, suspicion, on a par with probable cause, is sufficient. Nor must you be charged with a crime or even be accused of one, unlike criminal forfeiture, which requires that a person be convicted of an offense before his or her property is confiscated. Civil forfeiture amounts to a lawsuit filed directly against a possession, regardless of its owner's guilt or innocence. Adds the American Civil Liberties Union, every year federal, state, and law enforcement agents seize millions of dollars from civilians during traffic stops simply by asserting that they believe the money is connected to some illegal activity and without ever pursuing criminal charges. Under federal law and the laws of most states, they are entitled to keep most and sometimes all of the money and property they seize. So much for your constitutional protections. Needless to say, a number of legal experts can see no intrinsic constitutional applications for such laws, and yet they are used constantly by law enforcement agencies in a manner reminiscent of cops in third world countries. The protections our Constitution usually affords are out the window, Lewis Rull, a clinical law professor at the University of Pennsylvania and a leading forfeiture expert, says. And why? Because property doesn't have the same rights as a person. There is no right to an attorney, and in the majority of states, there is no innocent until proven guilty. You can tell that just by the title of the court cases, United States versus One Pearl Necklace, and United States versus approximately 64,695 pounds of shark fins. Cops have their victims at a distinct disadvantage in a number of ways. Cops have their victims at a distinct disadvantage in a number of ways. First, they have the guns and badges. Second, civil asset forfeiture doesn't have to meet the standard of probable cause. It barely reached a level of reasonable suspicion. And third, they know that oftentimes hiring a lawyer and taking the department to court would far exceed the cost of the confiscated money and valuables. Washington, D.C. charges up to $2,500 simply for the right to challenge a police seizure in court, which can take months or even years to resolve, Silverman writes. And this is in a city overwhelmingly dominated by fair-minded liberals. In fact, Silverman explains, the D.C. system has impoverished hundreds of poor citizens caught in the civil forfeiture nightmare. Cops there will confiscate anything and everything, including the automobiles these people use to get back and forth to low-paying menial labor jobs. Another sad but true fact about progressive D.C. It is so bad there, in fact, that the city's public defender service has filed suit on behalf of 375 car owners, calling the city's PD's policy devastating for hundreds of families who depend on their cars for many of the urgent and important tasks of daily life. Astonishingly, many police departments defend this abomination. We all know the way things are right now. Budgets are tight. Steve Westbrook, the executive director of the Sheriff's Association of Texas, told Silverman, "It's definitely a valuable asset to law enforcement for purchasing equipment and getting things you normally wouldn't be able to get to fight crime," he said. Other officers said if the practice of civil forfeiture becomes too heavily regulated to use, their departments would collapse economically, and of course that would endanger public safety. Can you say fear-mongering? Per Silverman. But a system that proved successful at wringing profits from drug cartels and white-collar fraudsters has also given rise to corruption and violations of civil liberties. Over the past year, I spoke with more than 100 police officers, defense attorneys, prosecutors, judges, and forfeiture plaintiffs from across the country. Many expressed concern that state laws designed to go after high-flying crime lords are routinely targeting the workaday homes, cars, cash savings, and other belongings of innocent people who are never charged with a crime. This pathetic use of the law amounts to little more than legalized theft. If a private citizen were to do something like this, he or she would go to jail. Civil forfeiture in the case of a convicted criminal is one thing. Stealing from innocent people to fund your police department is quite another, and quite despicable. And now on to the lighter side of the news, the Harper's Weekly Review, dated September 3rd, 2013. President Barack Obama announced that he would request congressional approval for a punitive military strike against the Syrian government for the August 21st poison gas attack that killed 1,429 people in Damascus. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon asked weapons inspectors to expedite a report on their findings following 4 days of investigation in Syria. And Secretary of State John Kerry claimed the United States had obtained independent proof that Bashar al-Assad used the nerve agent sarin against his own people. "I'm confident in the case our government has made without waiting for UN inspectors," said Obama. The word slam dunk should be retired from American national security issues, said Kerry. Former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld called Obama's Syria strategy mindless, and 43% of U.S. Department of Defense employees participating in an online game failed to locate Damascus on a map. Our biggest problem is ignorance, said the dean of the Bush School of Government and Public Service at Texas A&M University. We're pretty ignorant about Syria. French President François Hollande pledged to assist in any U.S.-led intervention. The British Parliament voted not to intervene. Defense ministers in Syria and Iran threatened to attack Israel if Assad's life was endangered. And crowds of Israelis mobbed gas mask distribution points in Haifa and Jerusalem. An 18-year-old Indian man who participated in the gang rape and murder of a woman on a New Delhi bus last December was sentenced to 3 years in a reform home. And a former Montana high school teacher who had confessed to raping a 14-year-old student who later committed suicide was sentenced to spend 31 days in jail. The girl, said the judge, was older than her chronological age. As an aside, I understand that they're trying to disbar that judge and kick him out of office. A South Korean newspaper reported that North Korea had executed the ex-girlfriend of Supreme Leader Kim Jong-un and 11 others for making and distributing a pornographic video, which it wasn't. Bo Xilai, a former Communist Party chief on trial in Jinan, China for bribery, embezzlement, and abuse of power, revealed an affair between his wife, who murdered a British businessman in 2011, and his former deputy, who Bo punched in the face while attempting to cover up his investigation into the case. They were, said Bo, like glue and lacquer. Ruth Bader Ginsburg became the first Supreme Court justice to officiate at a same-sex marriage ceremony. And the Department of the Treasury announced that federal tax provisions for married couples would apply to same-sex spouses regardless of their state of residence. The New York Police Department was revealed to have spied on several mosques it labeled terrorist enterprises. In protest of low wages, 8 Paraguayan bus drivers had reportedly nailed themselves to crosses. Might work here. Thousands of American fast food employees staged a walkout, and 4 exotic dancers filed suit against Fantasy Gentlemen's Club in Grand Junction, Colorado. Dunkin' Donuts apologized for having a model in blackface promote its charcoal donut in Thailand. Italian chocolatier Ferrero withdrew a German ad for white chocolate kisses featuring the slogans "Yes, white can," and "Germany votes white," which they do. A black New Jersey high schooler running for student government was found to have sent racist texts to himself. And a Glaswegian man complained to Scottish officials that an Edinburgh chip shop was charging for ketchup but not brown sauce. It reeks of racism, he said. KFC Japan announced that it would start selling deep-fried soup. And psychologists determined that people who hate Japan are likely also to hate the fictitious Monahan LPI 800 compact 2/3 cubic foot 700 watt microwave oven. I wonder how they figured that out. A University of Washington student moved the hand of another student over the internet. Swedish scientists confirmed the existence of Anun Pentium. Austrian molecular biologists successfully grew miniature human brains in a laboratory. Maybe they can pass them out in Washington. And Viennese ethologists determined that female musculus mice choose to mate with multiple virgin males in order to reduce the likelihood of infanticide. they figured that out. 9 police dog couples were married in Sri Lanka. A Stockholm man was threatened by a gang of drunken elk. And a New Zealand man was rescued from a remote Australian island where he had been trapped for 2 weeks by a 20-foot-long crocodile. We gave him a cold beer, said the man's rescuer, which was probably the wrong thing. Bino, an albino alligator at the Sao Paulo Aquarium, received acupuncture for his scoliosis. And a former lab chimpanzee named Brent was awarded $10,000 for an abstract tongue painting. A Maine lobster man caught a half-orange, half-brown lobster. Pennsylvania high school sophomore Brandon Silk was hospitalized for anaphylaxis after his classmates failed to honor a request that they not wear Axe body spray. And members of the Franconian Frankish Bund Association expressed concern that German girls were buying cheap foreign-made costumes for Oktoberfest. At the very latest, the craze will be over, said a board member, when a dirndl-making factory burns down in Pakistan. This article written by Camille Bromley. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, we have reached the end of another Kill Radio Weekly News and Review. Thanks to the hard-hitting Kill Radio News team, and people, be good to one another in the coming week, and stay out of the news.